Hey, it's Eric. I just wanted to say thanks for listening and supporting the podcast. If you're listening to this, then I'm going to guess you're interested in nootropics and brain enhancement. Using nootropics are certainly a great way to optimize your mind. But did you know all the neurotransmitters that boost your brain function are actually made in your gut? Serotonin, dopamine, GABA, acetylcholine are all synthesized from gut bacteria. In fact, there's a whole new field of research called psychobiotics that shows us how influential good gut health is to brain health. Unfortunately, so many people are suffering from gut problems and the associated brain fog, depression, anxiety, and neuroinflammation. The good news is that all of this is totally reversible. The number one thing you want to do to start healing your gut is to optimize your body's ability to break down food. Fixing the problem up top makes it easier for your gut further down the GI tract to heal and begin making the neurotransmitters you need. To help you do this, I highly recommend Masszymes from Bioptimizers. This product feeds your upper GI tract the essential enzymes you need to fully break down the carbs, fats, and proteins in the food you eat. As this food breaks down, you can then fully digest the macro and micronutrients you need to boost your nutrition and feed your good gut bacteria, which boosts all the anti-inflammatory functions of your body. Now, I've actually partnered with Masszymes to get listeners of the Holistic Nootropics podcast a free bottle of their product. There's no commitment, no cancellations, just a free trial to show you how effective these enzymes are. Just go to holisticnootropics.com/free enzymes and claim your free bottle. That's holisticnootropics.com/free enzymes and we'll get you all set up. Get those neurotransmitters and boost the power of your brain. Okay, on with the pod.
You're listening to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, your home for holistic, evidence-based cognitive enhancement strategies. And now your host, Eric Levi.
Hey, hey, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, where we discuss holistic, lifestyle-based cognitive enhancement. My name is Eric. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, and today on the podcast, I have Dr. Kurt Wohler. Dr. Kurt has been a functional and integrative medical physician, as well as a biomedical autism specialist for over 2 decades. He is an author of several health books, the co-founder of the Integrative Medicine Academy, which is an online integrative medicine health practitioner training program with multiple online courses, and runs a functional medicine website for doctors called the Functional Medicine Clinical Rounds. So me and Dr. Kurt had a fascinating, somewhat geeky conversation all about functional medicine and diet and lifestyle. Specifically, we talked about organic acids. We talked a lot about different neurotransmitters. We talked about dopamine. We talked about how gut bacteria can specifically affect dopamine metabolism. We talked about supplementation. We talked about mold. We talked about all kinds of things, again, pertaining to environmental chemicals and, one of my favorite new topics, which is organic acid testing, chemical testing. Dr. Kurt is a wealth of information as far as functional medicine testing goes. So I know you guys are going to love this podcast. I will say there were some connection issues. So there are some moments of times where Dr. Kurt is talking, or maybe I'm talking and we cut out a little bit, but you'll get the gist of the conversation. It's all there, and you're going to absolutely love it. Now, if you do love the podcast, I know you're going to, please remember to subscribe and leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're looking for the show notes with all the links and references to everything we discussed today, that can be found over at holisticnootropics.com/Dr. Kurt. Also, if you are new to the podcast or you want to learn more about using supplements, diet, and lifestyle to hack your brain for peak performance, be sure to check out holisticnootropics.com. And with no further ado, everybody, enjoy my conversation today with the one and only Dr. Kurt Wohler. Dr. Kurt Wohler, welcome to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast.
Hey, thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So I'm interested in talking to you today because you are a doctor of osteopath. And, you know, I talk to a lot of doctors on this podcast, and, you know, we talk a lot about the mind-body connection. And it seems like, you know, being in this field of osteopathy really focuses on that mind-body connection. So I'm curious if maybe you could talk a little bit about your background, how you got into being a doctor of osteopath, and what that even means.
Okay, great question. So real quickly, there's two types of fully licensed physicians here in the United States. You have medical doctors, or sometimes what are called allopathic doctors, and you have osteopathic doctors or osteopathic physicians. So both hold equivalent licenses to practice medicine and surgery. Both are licensed in all 50 states here in the U.S. We go through similar training, so the core curriculum, medical school, postgraduate training, etc. So you have osteopathic physicians who are pediatricians, orthopedic surgeons, cardiologists, neurologists. You have them in all specialties of medicine, just like you do in MD. One of the main differences is in the philosophy of how medicine is applied. And this comes about in the core essence of medical school, where we understand that the structure of the body, the musculoskeletal, the spinal system, has a tremendous influence over the physical function of the body. So as an osteopathic medical student, I got additional training that MD students don't get in understanding aspects of physical examination and musculoskeletal manipulation, which, by the way, interestingly enough, can have a significant impact on people's mental health and mental health status. So, I'm a general practitioner. A lot of osteopathic doctors, they used to anyway, go into family practice, you know, pediatrics, et cetera. And then you have certain ones that go and specialize. So a lot of DOs in the United States are family doctors, you know, internists, this type of thing. How I got interested in it is, you know, way back when I was going to college, I took a physiology and anatomy class and did pretty well with it and actually started tutoring it. And my physiology teacher pulled me into his office one day and said, "Hey, what are your plans?" And I said, "I don't really know. I didn't really, you know, I was pretty good at it, but I still didn't have a clue." And he goes, "You know, you ought to consider going to medical school because, you know, I think you have kind of what it takes and you might find it interesting." And so that set the course for me, and that's what became my pursuit. I learned about osteopathic medicine while I was in college applying to medical schools. I actually had a friend who was in a chemistry class I was taking, and she had been accepted to an osteopathic medical school in Maine called the University of New England. So I checked it out. I liked the philosophy. I had always been into health and nutrition. My mom really tried to, you know, eat healthy and talk about nutrition and these types of things. And it just became a natural thing for me to go into. And here I am 20 some odd years later, 23 years later or so.
That's interesting. And the reason, you know, I wanted to talk to you is because, I followed your work as far as what you do with the Great Plains Lab and our Great Plains Labs, and you put out some amazing content with these webinars. And what I like that you talk about, especially when it comes to things like mental health, is you really break down these different physiological functions like methylation and adrenal function and HPA axis function, in terms of how this affects the overall body, including the mind. And, you know, in the nootropic space, this is a thing that people don't really understand. You know, we think like, hey, if we just take, this racetam, or if we take lion's mane, or if we take, whatever the nootropic is that you read about on Reddit, that, you know, this is going to fix all our problems and it's going to give us the boost we want. But, you know, the truth is that there's so many other factors in play. So I'm sure you have a lot to say about that.
Oh my gosh, the body is incredibly complex and complicated. I mean, just from a biochemical standpoint, from a genetic standpoint, then you have all the epigenetic factors that lay on top of that can impact things. I've been recently, researching very in depth, the different physiological and biochemical relationships in B1. How significant it is from a central nervous system, peripheral nervous system standpoint when you're thiamine deficient and all the factors that can actually be a deficiency. So you're right. There isn't one thing that connects all the dots, We're a very sophisticated organism that requires, you know, a whole set of things in order to make things work properly. And where people get into trouble is that, you know, they're looking for the magic bullet, right? You know, like this is the one thing that's going to make everything work. And that very rarely exists. You know, you may have, you know, known that I've been doing work in the autism world for many years. And, you know, autism is classified as a neurodevelopmental disorder. It's really a brain disorder or a whole system disorder that actually affects the brain and nervous system that manifests as neurodevelopmental problems. But many of these kids actually have a lot of mental health challenges. And it's difficult to decipher out because many of them don't have language. They have poor attention and focusing issues. And so, but they're complex. And, you know, even in that community, you have certain individuals that are looking for that one supplement, that one thing that will, you know, set everything right. And it's just the reality, it doesn't exist. What you have to do ultimately when you get to the bottom line is start looking at different factors of how diet, how supplementation, how gut function, how the environment impacts our body, impacts our brain. And that actually is the core essence of integrative medicine for mental health as well, which is a growing field here in the United States and around the world, is understanding that mental health imbalances are often brought about because of other biological or biochemical imbalances. And so the work that I do with Great Plains is looking to uncover some of these things that tend to affect a far amount, you know, large amount of people, you know, quite significantly, that a lot of times conventional medicine doesn't understand. But if you start, you know, looking below the surface, these factors that often affect many, many people, you know, from all walks of life. And we could talk about some of those things if you'd like.
I'd love to. And it's so interesting that I love the integrative medicine movement. I feel like I'm seeing a lot more doctors that have this training. I think it's also, there's something to be said about when you're a doctor, and I've had this conversation a few times recently, that it almost feels like a lot of doctors, as soon as they close the book, their last book in medical school, and they get the degree, it's like they're done, you know? And I know this, like, because I went to school and I graduated, I said, I'm done with school, you know? And right. It's really, there has to be something to the idea that integrative doctors must have this curiosity that there's more work to be done, that at some point, you know, all of the antibiotics and all of the pharmaceutical drugs that, you know, in their defense, you only have like 8 to 10 minutes to really diagnose and treat somebody with. Maybe that's not the answer. And is there a better way? And that's why I love the integrative movement, because it's the first time that, you know, doctors like yourself are saying, okay, well, there's something else at play here, you know, whether it's the environmental toxicity or the gut function or the nutrient deficiencies. So it is encouraging to see that this movement is growing.
The reality is the book is never closed. The more I study, the more I learn, the more I start to appreciate how much I don't know, you know, and that is there's a vast amount of information, and medicine is never settled. I mean, on many levels, it's always an evolving process. And I think what's really important for your listeners is that integrative and functional medicine doctors such as myself is we're moving beyond this disease model, right? It's yeah, you have the disease and you have the diagnosis, but what's happening underneath? What is leading to that? What are some of the issues that could be either causing or contributing to that disease diagnosis, that framework that people are under? And so when you approach medicine that way, you're never done. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, the colleagues that I have, we're always searching. We're always seeking out new information because you have to. Because if you close the book in medical school, well, you're pretty much a dinosaur and you're irrelevant. So, you know, you have to keep digging and searching for information. And that's one of the things I've been doing for years now from the educational programs that either I've developed for my own Integrative Medicine Academy, online training academy for healthcare practitioners or the work that I do with Great Plains is to help practitioners and also help just non-medically trained individuals understand what's happening in their body and what are things that can cause or contribute to a host of, you know, underlying health issues that somebody else hasn't been able to figure out.
So as a practitioner then, are you seeing a trend, some kind of common thing? And I know, you know, obviously we're talking about integrative medicine. So there's always the idea of there's an unlimited amount of things that could contribute. But, you know, are you seeing anything, especially, you know, like when you talk about autism is on the rise and chronic disease is on the rise. Are you seeing any trends toward any one or two things that, sure, you have bio-individuality and you have people from these different backgrounds and different genetic makeups, but there always seems to be like these one or two things that commonly pop up with a lot of patients who just have these chronic issues, be it severe or maybe not as severe.
Diet would be number one. So just issues in diet or just, you know, issues in nutrition. So, I mean, we live in a country for the most part that, you know, people exist in a high calorie malnutrition state. Right, they eat a lot of calories, but they're not eating a lot of nutrient-dense food. And so they're not getting the nutrients they need to run the machinery of their body effectively. And over time, that starts to create problems, you know, all over, from hormonal issues, from musculoskeletal problems, to gut problems, to immune system, to brain and nervous system problems. So, you know, you can't ever get away from dietary or dietary intervention as a key point. I've often commented to patients as well as practitioners, you can come up with the greatest supplement program ever, but it's not going to overcome a lousy diet. So you have to start with the fundamentals, you know, and that is good nutrition. And then on top of that is, you know, getting good exercise, you know, moving your body, you know, all of these things that we know are important for overall physical, mental, emotional health, good sleeping habits, good lifestyle aspects. So diet would be number one on the list. And then probably second to that would be, I mean, there's aspects of environmental exposures for sure. And a lot of us now are exposed to way more chemicals than we ever were before. So that's chemicals in our air, our water, in our food, and how those things affect us adversely. And I could throw in that grouping of chemicals. I could throw in heavy metals, glyphosate, these types of things. That would be sort of its own, you know, kind of separate category. Probably an area in the body, if you had to focus on, that seems to have a global impact. That's going to have a global impact on the brain, nervous system, immune system, et cetera, would be the gut, right? The digestive system is the physical window of the body as far as absorption. It's one of the main routes we get rid of toxins in our body as well. Our digestive system is our largest immune organ. It has, you know, incredible regulatory aspects over immune function, over brain and nervous system function. The gut actually talks to the brain, and so problems in the gut can affect the brain, including, you know, causing or contributing to mental health problems. So most integrative and functional medicine doctors, when they're starting to work with a patient, it doesn't matter if they're coming in with depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism, rheumatoid arthritis, whatever, they're at some point focusing on what's going on in the gut. Because if the gut is toxic, the rest of your body essentially is not going to have a great chance of being optimally healthy. So I don't know if that helps, but I mean, diet, yeah, environmental factors, but from a fundamental integrative standpoint, the digestive system is a major focal point of interest.
Yeah, it's amazing because you just made me think about, I mean, I have a lot of gut conversations on here and I talk a lot about the gut, and the gut was my own personal kind of metamorphosis into really valuing health. And you hear diet and lifestyle all the time, but you know, in the end, it's kind of like, what does that mean? You know, it's like people do this thing and they go, well, I take a multivitamin, but I have McDonald's, you know, 3-4 times a week. Right. And I eat white bread, but I take a multivitamin, you know, and I think there's something to be said about being targeted and being, you know, intentional and not just taking a supplement because you think, well, if I get more of this, it's going to be fine. But then I have all these other underlying issues that I never really work on. And for some reason, I'm just not getting better.
I mean, a supplement can never completely replace Mother Nature, right? And the inherent things that we get through our food, the micronutrients, the macronutrients, the antioxidants, the different types of, you know, nutrients we get from our food is absolutely critical, because that's essentially how our body is designed. You know, if you think about, you know, our cells being biological systems, we actually come from the earth, we come from the natural world, which is where our food comes from too. I'm a big proponent of, you know, nutritional supplementation, but not in replacement of, you know, a whole food, comprehensively healthy diet, because it's really ultimately what you do today is important, but it's also what you do tomorrow, next week. It's the consistency over time. And it's shifting the paradigm of, you know, creating a healthy lifestyle for the long term, not just for the next couple months, so that I can go back to the way I was eating the last 20 years. And so nutritional supplements are important, and they certainly have a very important role in this discussion, because they can help move biology and biochemistry forward in a way that provides sometimes some immediate shift for somebody to feel better or create a cognitive change. But ultimately, in the long run, you want those changes or those changes that you're making with supplements to ultimately be taken over or at least supported in majority by the type of food that we eat. So I'm not downplaying supplements, but I think many times there's too much reliance on supplements to try to get the job done and not appreciating just the fundamentals of healthy living.
Well, I personally feel like when you said the phrase, I might not say it exactly how you said it, but it was, you know, we're calorie excessive and we're nutrient deficient or something along those lines, that this to me is where a lot of the breakdown comes in the, you know, in the food system, in the diet sphere, which is, it's not about calories, you know, because you can eat 4,000 calories, but if those are 4,000 calories or 3,000 calories and they're nutrient dense, I mean, first of all, you might not even need to eat that many calories if it's nutrient dense, because you'll get enough sustenance. But people are starving themselves because they think calories in, calories out. And in the end, it's like, well, there's so much more to the story as far as nutrition. You're talking about something like thiamine, you know, and then you're talking about something like methylation. And then you have to even break it down even further. It's like, do I overmethylate? Do I undermethylate? And then you kind of know, like, well, what nutrient do I need to make all this work right? Versus just simply saying, well, I'm just going to eat less calories through the day, and that's going to help me, you know, solve my diet problem.
Well, you know, you think about when you actually start studying nutritional science and biochemistry and mitochondrial activity, you realize how much metabolic energy that it takes to overcome nutrient depleted food, if you will, or if you're over consuming one singular type of food. Let's just say, for example, let's just take sugar, right? Just refined sugar, you know, in its various forms that is so common in our society. But it takes a lot of metabolic energy to try to metabolize it. And that metabolic energy is being produced by our cells, specifically our mitochondria in our cells that make the cellular energy currency that runs our body. Our brain, our nervous system, our musculoskeletal system, everything runs off of this energy currency. Well, it takes a lot of nutrients to make the mitochondria do what they do with the currency chemicals. And if you're eating food or a type of food over and over and over again, you're using nutrients. And those nutrients, by the way, are vitamins and minerals. And if they're not being replaced, because there are essential vitamins and minerals we have to get from food, this is where people start running into chronic illness standpoints. And thiamine is just an example of this because it's incredibly important in the metabolism of glucose. So if you're just eating a bunch of sugar, right, and you don't have enough thiamine around, you never can initiate glucose metabolism. So you never get to the point where you're actually producing enough of this energy currency chemical that the rest of our body needs. And all of these things are stressors within our system. And, you know, we can think of physical stress. That could be physical stress from physical exertion, from an injury of some sort, from an infection impacting our body, as well as mental, emotional stressors. When our body is under stress, okay, physical stress, so that could be from infection, that could be from an injury, that could be from fatigue, from a lack of sleep, mental, emotional stress, anxiety, fear, depression, just stress at work, stress in our life. All of that puts a demand on the machinery of our body to try to compensate for. And all of that energy that gets mobilized or attempted to be mobilized is heavily dependent on the nutrients that our body needs from our food. So it's kind of like, you need to accelerate your car, but you don't have enough gas or you don't have the right kind of gas, right? Eventually, you're just going to burn up your engine. When you start following things out, some people may develop chronic headaches. They may develop sleeping problems. Somebody else may develop anxiety, depression. Somebody else may develop a rheumatological condition because of nutrient deficits and chronic stress. And some of that is determined by genetics, by hereditary factors, and other things are determined by, you know, regulations within the digestive system, within the immune system.
Well, that's such a great comment on the world we live in right now. And I don't mean like, you know, what's going on in the news. I just mean like, as far as how much sugar people are eating, how much, I mean, you know, I was living in New York for a while and it's like, you just walk down the street, and this is really any city in America, but you just walk down the street and everywhere you look, it's bagels and bread and croissants and bakeries and sugar and, soda and high fructose corn syrup. And it's so easily available. And when you look at the numbers of how much of this stuff people are eating and drinking, if you have one every once in a while, it's not a big deal. But when this is your daily thing, it's not that this is just like bad food, but it's food that's literally putting your body into a stressful state, and it's using up whatever nutrition you're getting. And chances are, this is kind of like a self-perpetuating thing where it's like, well, if you start your day with a Red Bull and a donut, I don't think you're going to, at some point throw in a salad with some good quality, protein. It probably just keeps going and going, and you're constantly fighting your body from crashing. So this is why you see high numbers of coffee being sold and energy drinks and stimulants. And then eventually those turn into probably different medications, and it just keeps going on and on like that, simply because the nutrition deficit is so profound.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I know we probably sound like a broken record, talking about these things, over and over again about, diet, nutrition and whatever, but you can't get away from it. That's the thing, is you really can't get away from it. And people can exist in these kind of states for years, for decades. And it can take a while to turn things around where, your body is functioning more at an optimal level. I mean, the key essence of this approach is instead of looking at from a disease standpoint, and I'm fully aware of the importance of diagnosis and whatnot, but it's trying to get back and say, well, how's the body supposed to function?
So just kind of shifting gears here, some specific kind of more nootropic questions or kind of center questions. So there's this interesting phenomenon that I didn't really understand until I started kind of diving into the Great Plains stuff and webinars, which is this idea of dopamine. So, in our society, it's like we talk a lot about. And in the nootropics, we're always talking like, well, we need more dopamine, right? If you're depressed, you need more dopamine. But dopamine is kind of like a double-edged sword. And it has, you know, it has positives like, yes, you do want more dopamine. Like if your gut's not producing enough dopamine and your brain doesn't have enough dopamine, of course, you're going to probably experience some depression issues. But there's more to the story, especially when it comes to something like dopamine beta-hydroxylase, or even something like supplementing L-tyrosine or L-tryptophan, and why, you know, that might not be the best thing to really boost, I guess, the amount of pleasure or happiness that you have in your life or that you're looking for from these supplements.
Yeah, I mean, dopamine is an important neurotransmitter, but it's not the only one. And these neurotransmitters don't work in isolation. Right. There's an overlap. You could create an entire Venn diagram over these neurotransmitters and how they overlap, support each other, as well as sometimes having similar physical manifestations when they are deficient or are in excess. If you take something like dopamine is very interesting because it's a highly reactive chemical. The nerve cell does a good job at sequestering dopamine so that not a lot of it is replicated. And so we need to have robust antioxidant systems in our cells. We do anyway, just because of metabolic activity tends to burn or generate free radicals. So the glutathione helps to neutralize that dopamine byproduct. Well, if you keep ramping up dopamine, okay, and you keep suppressing or lowering your glutathione levels, ultimately over time, what can end up happening is you have too much dopamine and that causes destruction within the nervous system. And this is a classic thing sometimes seen in Parkinson's, for example. There is a loss of centers of dopamine in the brain. And many times when medication is given, it helps initially in Parkinson's, but you're driving up dopamine at many levels. And ultimately that has a negative effect long-term. So I'm always, you know, cautioning people about this, that it's a balance, right? It's not about driving something up with amino acids or something else for this alleged desired effect. It's understanding, well, what are the negative consequences? Even that person need to do that. So for example, we know that dopamine gets converted to norepinephrine. And norepinephrine is very important for attention and focusing itself within the nervous system. And there's an enzyme that makes that happen called dopamine beta hydroxylase. So dopamine beta hydroxylase converts dopamine to norepinephrine. But there are many things that impact on dopamine beta hydroxylase activity. There can be genetic factors that weaken its activity. But if you have a copper deficiency or an ascorbic acid deficiency, that also can negatively affect the enzyme. Basically, that means if you're copper deficient or ascorbic acid deficient, the activity of the enzyme is lowered, which means your dopamine levels will rise. Also, certain infections, certain bacteria inhibit the function of that enzyme. And some of these are called Clostridia or Clostridia bacteria. Now, people have probably heard about Clostridia difficile, but there's other types of Clostridia bacteria that produce their own metabolic compounds that negatively impact that enzyme. And so that's important to understand because I've actually seen patients who start taking high amounts of L-tyrosine amino acid at the same time they've got a Clostridia infection, and their situation gets worse, right? It drives their dopamine way high, and at the same time, it's also generating a lot of oxidative stress within the brain and nervous system. It's interesting, too, there is actually a common contaminant in many grain products, corn products, for example. And there's a...
What is this chemical?
It's a fusarium mold.
Okay.
And the chemical, there's a mycotoxin, or there's a certain chemical that this mold produces called fusaric acid. Mm. And fusaric acid is also an inhibitor of dopamine beta hydroxylase. So there's all these things that can impact one biochemical system in the brain, but it's really important because if you have an underlying Clostridia infection, L-tyrosine, it's possible that you can make that Clostridia infection worse and also increase the chemicals that inhibit an individual that consulted with me that had early onset Parkinson's disease. And they were actually following a protocol that they found online that was trying to bolster dopamine levels. Well, it required, I don't even remember how many milligrams of tyrosine they were taking. The problem was they had an underlying Clostridia infection. Yeah, so these Clostridia bacteria, it's a whole group of bacteria. Most people know about Clostridia difficile, that strain or that species that can cause a lot of digestive problems. But there's many different types of Clostridia difficile. Not all of them cause gut problems. Some produce metabolic toxins that interfere with proper dopamine metabolism. And there are other types of Clostridia bacteria that do that as well. So the key point is that in this individual I was talking about, they went online, they searched out what supplements could help Parkinson's disease. They came up with this protocol. And it was for somebody else, it might have been fine, right? But for this individual, it was the exact opposite of what they were hoping for. And it was because they had this underlying bacterial infection that had not been detected. And this is my concern of just kind of high dose, in many cases, just high dose amino acid supplementation, kind of taken randomly, without understanding sort of the negative consequences that might happen biochemically in different areas of the body, and particularly in people who have chronic gut problems. So one of the things that I do with the organic acids test is on that test, you can actually evaluate for these Clostridia toxins. And if they're elevated, it's strongly recommended not to be taking large amounts of certain amino acids. Tyrosine, particularly, and also phenylalanine is also an issue, too. So, it doesn't happen in everybody, but it's certainly worth checking.
That's so interesting because I've definitely heard of people taking L-tyrosine, and I've seen it everywhere. And there's so many stories of people taking L-tyrosine. And it's like this internet chemistry where it's like, well, we know tyrosine is the precursor to dopamine. So 1 + 1 = 2, right? But in the body, it's like 1 + 1 = 12 because there's all of these other factors that play into it. And this idea that the bacteria in your gut can 100% influence what happens with that metabolic process. And that, there's also this other part where the dopamine actually has to turn into norepinephrine. And I'm curious what you think of this, because it was actually after I started really getting into this idea of dopamine beta hydroxylase and trying to understand the conversion of dopamine to norepinephrine that I kind of formulated this theory, and I wonder what you think of it, which is, when you're looking at somebody or in yourself and you want that dopamine, you want what you perceive to be like a dopamine, not a high, but you just want to feel good. You want to get excitement in your day. You want
the dopamine hit.
You want the dopamine hit, right? So you're not like this is the thing about people who use drugs or alcohol or who are adrenaline junkies, right? Maybe it's not that they're not getting enough dopamine, but that it's not actually getting converted into norepinephrine. And that's why you feel the need to get more dopamine to essentially try to force more into norepinephrine. So really what dictates your level of excitement in things isn't so much the dopamine, but it's the enzyme that converts it to norepinephrine.
Yeah, well, that is certainly, I would certainly agree with that. And I think, too, it's not being so singularly focused on just one neurotransmitter, because there's an overlap in how these things function, too. We can look at things from a biochemical chart, right, and kind of go, okay, I see where this one converts over here, and then this does that. But you know, it's our, there's so much overlap in our body. And from the sympathetic to the, you know, to the parasympathetic nervous system, you've got acetylcholine, you've got serotonin, you've got dopamine, you've got norepinephrine, you have all of these things. So, you know, too much of one thing can certainly be problematic, but it's, you know, there's a lot of things that can lead to stress. There's a lot of things that can lead to feeling depleted, you know, from a mental health standpoint, mental energy standpoint, physical standpoint. I mean, you could just take the mitochondria, for example, right? There's mitochondria in our brain. If you're mitochondria deficient, maybe you may have a mitochondrial problem, certainly too. But there are certain things that are important to recognize. And, you know, we're talking about mental health. You're talking about these types of things that people do to try to bolster attention or bolster how they feel or more energy. And, you know, you got to be careful with certain things in susceptible individuals. You know, it may be that there's a certain amount of the population that could, you know, just take amino acid supplements and do okay with it. Their body's able to compensate and whatever. But there are people out there, and there seem to be more and more now because of the overlap of chemical exposure, the overlap of mold exposure, the overlap of just, you know, deficiencies in other types of cofactors and vitamins and minerals that support these biochemical systems, that I'm just seeing anymore, that there's more and more people who just seem to be having trouble processing and utilizing some of these supplements than, let's say, 20 years ago. And that, you know, maybe it's just my practice. Maybe you talk to other practitioners that aren't seeing as many issues, but it kind of sounds like you're seeing similar things.
Well, I'm finding the more I talk to a lot of practitioners, there's a couple things that keep popping up, and it's the mold issue, which I think you eloquently broke down why, I mean, really why it's an issue as far as mental health goes, you know, because it's essentially... it's essentially hijacking that dopamine metabolism. But then, you know, what I'm also seeing a lot, and I've been thinking a lot about, is antibiotics and just the prevalence of antibiotics. It's almost, I mean, as prevalent as, you know, you could look at how much sugar and junk food people eat, but then the amount of antibiotics people have taken over the years and how that compromises gut function, which of course is going to compromise, you know, neurotransmitter production and mental health and the whole slew of mitochondria right. production.
By the way, one thing about antibiotics, and you're absolutely right about that, is you get, you know, people have known for a long time, you take an antibiotic and all of a sudden I get some secondary or yeast problem or a candida problem. What they found is that these yeast organisms, candida is a yeast, right? So yeast is a type of fungi. So if you look at the biological group of fungi, it includes yeast. It also includes mold. But candida is a yeast. Many of these yeast organisms that live in our digestive tract have their own metabolism, right? So these are living organisms, and they have their, you know, they take in fuel and they have their own byproducts of metabolism. Well, some of these byproducts, what are called the organic acids, can interfere with different neurochemistry in our brain. So we know that the byproduct or byproducts of Clostridia metabolism, some of them can interfere with dopamine. Well, some of these yeast byproducts can interfere with neurochemicals as well. In fact, there's a few that actually are known to interfere with phenylalanine metabolism. So if you think about phenylalanine to tyrosine, tyrosine to DOPA, well, if you inhibit the enzyme that converts phenylalanine to tyrosine, which is phenylalanine hydroxylase, you're going to have a dopamine deficit on the other. You're going to have a dopamine deficit, but now you're going to have too much phenylalanine. And then, you know, so there's actually a condition called phenylketonuria where there's too much phenylalanine buildup, and that is also toxic to the brain and nervous system. Certain mold can do it too. Actually, there was a study that just came out that was specific to autism. What they found is that autistic kids tend to have a high level of something called okra toxin. Mm-hmm. Now, okra toxin is a toxin produced by aspergillus mold. We're all exposed to aspergillus mold. It can be in our food as well as in our environment. Okra toxin is very high in many foods like grains, coffee, etc. Even cows who are consuming aspergillus contaminated feed can sequester mycotoxin. It can get into the meat. It can get into the milk supply. Anyway, okra toxin is actually an inhibitor of neurochemistry by altering phenylalanine metabolism. So it's very sophisticated, and there's a lot of research still going on with this. But this is why I go back to why so many practitioners such as myself focus on the digestive system and how it can impact the rest of the body. It's not just about, which is important, you're absorbing nutrients. Yeah, that's important, but there's a lot of toxins that can be generated from the bowel that can impact people's brain and nervous system, and in some cases contribute to mental health problems like depression, like anxiety, and even in some cases trigger psychosis.
Yeah, and candida is such an interesting topic that the second I think I have it figured out, there's like a whole new curveball. You know, it's like you open up a door and now there's just a whole new escape the room you got to figure out with candida. And you know, it's like, is it good? Is it bad? It's good and bad, you know. And it almost seems like a thing where it's like, it's in you, it belongs there, but you have to make sure that you keep it under control, which is itself, you know, a full-time job. But I've seen some information as far as different nutrients that play into candida, which are like B6, lysine, biotin. Now, are those good to kind of help candida, or does that kind of eliminate it? What do you think about those?
They tend to keep it under control. And so you're right about candida, you know, and that's another, candida is a very large group of organisms. You have all different kinds of candida organisms. Some are actually normal inhabitants of our digestive system, and some can be in our skin. So these are sophisticated organisms that have been around a lot longer than we have. But there's going to be a certain percentage that live in our digestive tract or maybe are flowing in and out, you know, as we're different environments that we're exposed to. Candida has, as a group, if you think of it in just a general standpoint, it has a high propensity to become invasive. So environmental changes that happen at a microscopic level, so changes in temperature, carbon dioxide levels, pH, so the acid alkalinity of its local environment can have a stress-inducing effect. And when candida becomes stressed, they transform into invasive forms. They basically grow what are called hypha or pseudo-hypha that are like tentacles or roots. And so they can actually start to burrow and invade the lining of the digestive system. And many times candida can also induce stress activity in adjacent candida to do the same thing. So candida is known to trigger a leaky gut kind of scenario where it starts to break down the space in between our epithelial cells. So that can create inflammation and increase food reactions. Candida also produces its own organic acids that they themselves can impact brain and nervous system function. One particular organic acid that gets produced because of the presence of invasive candida is something called arabinose. And arabinose in the body is acted upon or countered by things like B6, lipoic acid, and biotin. And so if you have healthy amounts of those, you can at least combat some of the arabinose that gets produced. It may not be 100%, but you can limit the effect. The problem with too much arabinose is arabinose interacts with lysine. And so lysine amino acid is very important in body metabolism. And then that complex interacts with L-arginine, which is another important amino acid. And it ends up forming something called pentosidine. Now, pentosidine falls in the same group of chemicals that hemoglobin A1C falls into. These things called advanced glycation end products. Mm. The downside to pentosidine is they're very large molecules, but they trigger autoimmune reactions. They can damage collagen in the body. They can damage myelin in the body. And so they're difficult to get rid of once they've been established. And all of this occurs because of just that overgrowth and overexpression of invasive candida. And that's one pathway that's linked to invasive yeast. There's many others as well. Another interesting side note to this is if we're thinking about metabolism, because you talked about early on consuming too much sugar. Well, candida love glucose, right? That's their primary fuel source for their body's metabolism. But a lot of people don't understand that the end product of glucose metabolism in a yeast cell is ethanol or alcohol. And so there are people actually who develop what's called auto-brewery syndrome. If you look that up, they have drunken-like behavior because of their gut being full of digestive yeast producing ethanol. One of the things that we've seen in the autism world for many years is these autistic kids are incredibly sensitive to an overgrowth of yeast, you know, including candida. And many parents will describe their kids as being acting drunk, goofiness, giddiness, silliness, inappropriate laughter. I've seen candida problems so extreme in some of these special needs kids where their behavior is very erratic and it basically being eliminated within 48 to 72 hours of taking an antifungal medication. So not everybody has the same reaction, but the potential of those kinds of reactions are quite profound because all of that is having a negative impact on the brain and nervous system as far as how behaviors are manifested. So wow. I've seen adults with brain fog. I've seen them with headache. I've seen them focusing and concentration problems who are manifesting that way, whereas an autistic child may just be having behavioral issues or drunken type behavior.
So essentially, a candida yeast overgrowth can produce, and I would imagine due to high consumption of sugar or carbohydrate, can produce ethanol. Essentially, it's almost like you've been drinking, and then you start to experience. For a lot of kids, it's like these autistic symptoms. But then, even something like brain fog is kind of like that symptom of this. Was it Brewer's auto intoxication?
Auto brewery syndrome.
Yeah. So it's like your gut is making you drunk, and it's causing brain fog, which is a thing that people, and I know brain fog itself is very multifactorial, but that's such an interesting thing. It's like, I think a lot of people have this experience when you eat too much sugar, you do have that kind of, you do almost feel drunk off sugar in a way.
By the way, one of the interesting things about thiamine, right? They know that thiamine absorption or proper utilization of thiamine in the small intestine can be deactivated by things called thiaminases. And alcohol consumption is a major contributing factor to thiamine deficiency. So, that in fact, here in the United States, people who are long-term alcoholics are almost certain to have a thiamine deficiency. And in severe cases, they can develop encephalopathy and mental health problems because of that. Excuse me. Well, long-standing yeast overgrowth that's producing ethanol in the digestive tract could have a similar effect. I'm not making the claim that a candida problem could lead to some severe kind of Wernicke-Korsakoff type of syndrome that would be seen in somebody who's a chronic alcoholic. But there can be mild or low-level thiamine deficiencies that could occur because of the existence of yeast, just like we get that long-term because of the overconsumption of just refined carbohydrates.
And do you think... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, do you think a thiamine deficiency could also play into something like leaky gut?
Yeah, I have to look into that more because it's something I'm looking into now. I believe that part of the structure of at least the development of the epithelial lining, and I want to say the tight junctions may in part be thyme independent. Somebody else might know that more than I do right now. But I know that thymine plays a huge role in mitochondrial activity. So it plays a significant role in energy metabolism. But there are other aspects of it too that it does play some functional status within the digestive. Let's say, for example, right now, thymine deficiencies as being a contributing factor to what some people are calling SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Because one of the things that does happen in a severe thymine deficiency is gastroparesis, or just digestive system dysfunction, constipation, they call like a gastrointestinal beriberi type of scenario. So thymine deficiencies can affect, they largely affect the cardiovascular system, but also the nervous system, brain and nervous system, because these are two systems in our body that generate a lot or need a lot of metabolic energy to function properly, as well as our gut. So yeah, we could go off in so many angles on this, but you know, it's very interesting when you just start looking at what the gut does for us in a positive way, but what a toxic gut can do in a negative way.
Yeah. And it, you know, to go back to the diet aspect, I mean, you just look at the numbers, just the economics of the food that is consumed in this country, right? And it's pretty plain to see that. I don't know how, you know, most of the population doesn't have some sort of gut disorder, you know, which of course it definitely plays into something like mental health issues, anxiety, depression, of course, because the neurotransmitters are made down there. And then we know that certain gut bacteria dysregulation or even worse, you know, interactions with mold in your environment paired with a bad gut, paired with, you know, something like a nutrition deficiency. Again, you go back to the food that's consumed in this country, the fast food, the processed food, even, you know, the industrial agriculture meats or the fruits and vegetables sprayed with glyphosate. You see what's going on from these different standpoints, and it just always goes back to, well, of course people's guts are messed up, and most people are probably dealing with some kind of leaky gut system or leaky gut scenario at the very least.
Well, I think most people have digestive problems. Sometimes they just don't know it because it's not always manifesting as loose stools or constipation or you know, bloating or cramping, right? But there still can be problems. So the vast majority of people have some kind of imbalance in their digestive system. But the thing is, we as humans are incredibly resilient. And, you know, we can exist in a state of chronic stress and still survive for a long period of time. And if you take even just the extremes of that, you know, people who survived, you know, concentration camps or whatever, I mean, talk about the most extreme types of environments and still people can survive. But if you think about things in today's world, you know, are people thriving? That's the difference. People are surviving, but are they thriving? Mm-hmm. And so we really have a culture of just chronic, I don't even want to call it illness. It's just sort of this chronic situation that people are not living physically, mentally, emotionally to their full potential. So they're getting by, right? But they're not thriving. They're not optimized. And so we start to take on this perception that, you know, it's normal to feel kind of lousy, or it's normal to feel fatigued, or it's normal to have depression, or it's normal to have anxiety or sleep problems and all of these things. You know, we all have stress and we are all facing things that we can't control in our world, right? But there seems to be a normalcy now of that poor health or a level of poor health and symptoms and lack of optimal function is consider to be normal. And it's anything but normal. And, you know, by the time many of us physicians see a patient, they've been existing in this state of dysfunction, in some cases, for decades. And no one's ever talked about maybe, you know, how to turn things around or look at things in a different way, because our medical system is a disease model. And it's not that it's not effective in certain things, but it's certainly not effective at keeping people well, you know, and it's not very effective at helping people get optimally well once they're chronically ill. It's great for emergency and high technical diagnostics. It's amazing. But from the standpoint of chronic illness, I mean, let's face it, conventional medicine falls way short for in most cases.
Well, this is why I love the organic acids test, because it's so easy for people to do. I mean, you just have to pee in a cup and then, you know, put it in the mail. Who doesn't love putting their pee in the mail? And then, you know, but what you get in return, and you could do the basic organic acids panel, you could check your mold, you could check your environmental toxins. But even for people who are like me, you know, and you're like a self-proclaimed, you know, health nut, and you're like, I'm healthy, I do all the healthy stuff, but then you got these chronic things that you're always trying to fight. And this is where the biohacker world comes in, where they say, you know, we're going to hack your body, we're going to optimize your metabolism, we're going to fast for 7 days, and we're going to do all these things that are this. And then you still always have these nagging things. Now you get literally a readout that shows you, well, this is what these different metabolic processes are doing in your body. And these are the little red flags that we can see. I mean, we have the evidence right here. We can see exactly what that thing is, and we can tie it to what you're experiencing in real life.
Yeah, the organic acid test, I first started doing it right when I was out of my medical training. I was new in practice. I went to an autism conference, interestingly enough. I only remember a few things from that conference, and one of them was the organic acid test. I started ordering it on a few early patients. I was totally overwhelmed by the amount of information, and then I've dedicated the last 20 some odd years to applying this test in practice. It's a very important test. Let me just describe, you know, what it is real quickly for people. So organic acids are compounds that all of us produce naturally. So they contain carbon as well as oxygen, hydrogen, phosphorus, different compounds. So most people have heard of lactic acid, right? That muscle burn you get, you know, if you overexercise. So that's a natural organic acid all of us produce. But there's a range of normalcy. If you have too many organic acids, it can indicate that there's some kind of blockage somewhere in some biochemical system. So, and there's many, many different types of organic acids. Many organic acids are linked to certain disease conditions only seen in kids. So a lot of times when people get an organic acid test, it's on a child who's not thriving. But again, nutritional deficiencies can lead to increases of these things too. The other thing is the organisms that live in our gut. So bacteria, pathogenic bacteria, yeast, candida produce their own organic acids. What happens is these organic acids get absorbed into our body and then are concentrated in the urine. So the urine concentrates these organic acids as a reflection of what is circulating in our bloodstream. So it's a convenient test to get, not only to detect imbalances in our own organic acids, but also organic acids that are reflective of overgrowth of pathogens in our digestive system. So, and it provides a lot of detail. So it gives you insight into yeast and candida toxins, clostridia toxins, certain mold organic acids too, and then other things, mitochondrial function, nutritional deficiencies, etc. So to me, in practice, it's a game changer. That's why I teach so much about it. I do, you know, an introductory course on organic acids and an advanced course as well. We also actually provide, you know, there's a website people can access these tests called Lab Test Plus. So labtestplus.com is a website where people can access the organic acids test or access mold testing or stool testing. And anytime a test is ordered through Lab Test Plus, you know, it comes to us, and then there's a written interpretation of what those relevant findings are. So it's very useful that way. So people have access to the stuff on their own. And then if there's, just real quickly, if there's practitioners listening, the organic acid test to me is also, to me, from a diagnostic standpoint, it's the center of the wheel, right? It's the hub. It's a focal point because it allows me to access a wide variety of biochemical systems. But there are certain markers that sometimes show up on the organic acid test that might suggest, hey, we should go and look at mold toxins, or this marker is high, we might want to look at chemical toxins as well, because there can be other things that may be important to look at that adversely affect people. So there's a lot to talk about, obviously, but to me, you always, always start with the organic acid test. That's a must-do test.
Yeah, and it was funny because when I took my organic acid test, I also took the toxin test, the GPL tox, and you know, it's interesting because on that GPL tox are these different environmental chemicals that I think even more so than the organic acid test, that you can look at the, you know, corresponding sources of where those chemicals come from, and you can go, oh my God, yes, I use that. Like, I forget the name of the chemical, but it's the one that's found in the styrofoam. It's found in styrofoam. Yeah, and what is it called?
Styrene.
Yeah. So it's like you see people drinking hot coffee out of these styrofoam cups. And I remember because just after I took that test and then I found out that that's what that was, I got offered a cup of coffee in a styrofoam cup. I'm like, no, thank you. I'm good. But, you know, when I lived in Boston, you know, everyone's drinking Dunkin' Donuts coffee in Boston, and it's all out of those styrofoam cups. Yeah. And then there's another one that's commonly found in fireworks. And in Puerto Rico, the New Year, it's a big deal here. And there's, from basically Thanksgiving to January 1st, it's just fireworks being shot off every single day. And from 11:50 on December 31st to about 12:05 a.m. on January 1st, I mean, there's probably 10,000 fireworks shot off in my immediate perimeter, like where I lived. And it was amazing. It was like the sky was just all kinds of different colors. I thought it was in a video game. I'd never seen anything like it. And then I take the organic GPL tox, and whatever that chemical was, I can't remember the name of it, it was off the charts. Wow. And so that's when you start to see like, oh wow, this stuff is really accurate. And if you really want to be an investigator into your health, it's an amazing place to start.
Yeah, that chemical is called perchlorate. And it's found in fireworks, rocket fuel, interestingly enough. It's also found in certain pesticides. It's a thyroid inhibitor. So this is important. If anybody's got any kind of thyroid problem, particularly low thyroid function, they want to check their perchlorate levels. They're concerned about perchlorate in women who are pregnant because it could lead to hypothyroidism, which could affect the newborn. There's something called the Diwali festival. It's a week-long festival. They shoot off 50,000 tons of fireworks in this week-long. And the concerns are perchlorate poisoning. So that's very interesting that yours was high. I've actually seen that high in some kids that actually did have hypothyroidism. So definitely, by the way, that GPL tox is an important test for any woman to do who's wanting to get pregnant, to see what they're being exposed to. So, for example, there are certain organophosphate chemicals, dimethyl and diethyl phosphate, that are known central nervous system toxins. In fact, they found that in autism, communities that are exposed to these different types of insecticides, these organophosphates, they'll often have higher rates of autism spectrum disorders in children exposed to these chemicals at an early age, particularly. So the Central Valley of California, they've done some studies down in California. So any farming community, there's going to tend to be a higher propensity for those kinds of compounds.
Yeah, oh my God, that is so interesting. It's like, you know, you just kind of live your day-to-day life, and it's like these little, you know, these little chemicals that are kind of below your consciousness, right? They're just there and they're in your environment and you don't think that you're being exposed to it. But really, it's like when you see that test, you realize there's another one that is found in rubber. I can't think of the name of it, but I remember the example was given that you see this a lot in people who go to like CrossFit gyms. And, you know, the floor, it's all this rubber mat and you're just breathing that stuff in and you think you're going, you're getting a workout, but really what you're doing is you're actually retoxing your body with this stuff.
Yeah. That chemical is 1,3-butadiene. It actually is a derivative of petroleum. So another place you can get that, you see a lot in kids who play sports. So soccer, football, baseball fields, like where I live, they started converting a park from grass to that synthetic turf. If you ever run your hand over it, you see those little beads, little black, look like little BBs. Okay, that's basically, that's rubber. So it's 1,3, that's a 1,3-butadiene exposure. Interesting, I had a family, it's a couple of years ago, so I was a family in Mexico, the family was in the petroleum industry. So we had dad, mom, brother, and then the autistic son. So we did GPL tox out tests on all the family and then repeated them too. The family actually had a soccer property that the only person who really went on that was the son, who was not autistic. He had the highest levels of 1,3-butadiene of the entire family. Mom and dad was in the petroleum industry. His levels weren't that high. They were still present, but not as high as the son who played soccer on that soccer field. His autistic brother didn't have that high levels, but he never went on that soccer field. But the autistic child had the highest levels of all, pretty much across the board, of other chemicals, including organophosphates, including perchlorate. And there was another herbicide called 2,4-D, which was also very high, which was really kind of showing that they all had similar exposures. The autistic child had the highest levels. And what's known in autism, which is common in other types of individuals with chronic fatigue, chronic neurological problems, et cetera, it was a detoxifier. He couldn't get rid of these chemicals as effectively as the rest of the family.
Yeah. Wow. Then this brings up the whole idea of detoxification and how to optimize that, which is, I mean, that's a complicated topic because I mean, there's so many ways to properly detox and it's, and the more that I learn about mental health and optimization of the brain, especially with things like whether it's autism or Alzheimer's or, you know, any of these disorders, ADHD, anxiety, even, I mean, there's these chemicals that are getting in the brain, or, you know, getting into the cell and disrupting mitochondrial function. And a lot of times, instead of trying to put more stuff in, like, hey, instead of taking $100 of supplements a month, you know, maybe what you should be doing instead is trying to figure out what you're deficient in and whatever detoxifying agent you're deficient in and start working on that along with detoxifying practices like sweating more and you know, sauna and drinking more water and things like that.
Yeah, the two things that when we first start the of people trying to change their exposures, okay, is filter their water and try and eat as much organic foods as possible. The other thing would be if they're using any sprays, any pesticides, herbicides around their home, is to try to go more natural. Get away from the glyphosate, get away from these things as much as possible, because if you're exposing your environment, you know, that's just another source. You can't do anything about your neighbors. For the most part, you can't do anything about the local park or the golf course or whatever, but you can at least limit your exposure in your surrounding area, meaning your home and what's coming into your home from water and the food that you're eating. That's really important.
Yeah. Well, it's been so interesting, Dr. Waller. We've gone quite a while here. We've talked about so much. You're such a wealth of information. I certainly thank you for your time. I know you have some really great, interesting content online. I know you work with practitioners, trying to help them. You have the Integrative Medicine Academy. So if you just want to kind of go through where people can find you, if they want to work with you, if practitioners are interested in taking some of your courses, where is the best place to go for all that?
Sure. So if you're a practitioner, so we have Integrative Medicine Academy is an online academy of designated courses for integrative functional medicine. So toxicity, autism, we have a functional medicine course, learn how to use the organic acids test, both from a fundamental and advanced standpoint, mold toxicity, chemical toxicity. So integrativemedicineacademy.com is that's our hub, right, for our different what are called mastery courses. We also have a new website called Functional Medicine Clinical Rounds. And this is for healthcare practitioners where they can join this website and do one-on-one consults with us. So you can do one-on-one consults regarding lab tests. That could be Great Plains. That could be other lab companies, including your organic acids test, as well as there's an interactive forum and then educational videos too. We also have something called a monthly clinical rounds, which is a lecture plus a Q&A session that's done live. So that's Functional Medicine Clinical Rounds. I actually have a biomedical autism website called Recovery System that people can join. So a lot of parents will join that Lab Test Plus site. So labtestplus.com is a website that allows people to access the testing we've been talking about, putting the toxin test, the mycotox, and the organic acids test. And then if you want to consult with me privately, mysunrisecenter.com. Our practice name is called Sunrise Functional Medicine.
Yeah, and we'll put links to all that in the show notes after the when we post the podcast. And I will say for myself as a practitioner, you know, I have watched quite a few of your different webinars and you've got a lot of great information out there. And, you know, for any practitioner, whether you're if you're a nutritionist or you're a health coach or even up to a regular doctor, I think, you know, the content you put out is so valuable and it's so needed for this time, especially when it comes to things like understanding environmental chemicals and these complex things like methylation and HPA axis and gut function. Certainly appreciate the work you're doing.
Awesome. It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And for more, everybody, feel free to check out the show notes here at holisticnootropics.com/Dr. Kurt. And for more on all things nootropics, check out holisticnootropics.com. Thanks so much for watching. We'll catch you on the next episode. Peace.
Thanks for listening. For more brain-boosting info, in-depth articles, and show notes, check out holisticnootropics.com.